ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Yes, obesity is a big problem. Pardon the pun. It's typically determined by the ratio of weight to the square of height, known as the body mass index, or BMI. Have you ever figured out your BMI? It's done with a simple equation. You simply find out your height and then your weight, divide it, and you get a number. And the number is not always what you might desire. If you're over 30, if it ends up being over 30, you are, according to health experts at least, obese. That has happened to many of us. Significantly more people who are obese are likely to suffer from conditions like diabetes. Higher BMI is also known to increase the risk of more than a dozen types of cancer. And despite Australia, the USA, and such countries having obesity problems, the latest research also shows that obesity rates in low and middle income countries are affected more than many high income earners. More than 80% of adults in Polynesia and Micronesia were living with obesity in 2022, for example, the highest rates in the world. Joining us once more is Professor Luigi Fontana. Luigi is Scientific Director of the Charles Perkins Centre and the Royal Prince Alfred Health for Life program. He's author of the wonderful book, The Path to Longevity, How to Reach 100 with the Health and Stamina of a 40-Year-Old, and the Manual of Health, Longevity and Wellbeing. You can also see him on his YouTube channel, Longevity Now, FL, if you want as well. Luigi, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Hello. Hi.
Been a while since you were
yes.
back. I'd like to say I've lost weight since I last saw you. But I think I have a little tiny bit on any given day. Look, where is Australia on these indices, these obesity indices? We're not doing very well, are we?
No, unfortunately not. You know, we're part of this pandemic of overweight obesity. So according to recent governmental data, 25% of our children are living with obesity between 2 and 17 years of age. And 67% of adults are living with obesity, but it's age dependent. So I have here the numbers in front of me. For men, for example, age 18 to 24 is 52%.
Hang on, 18 to 24?
Yes, 18 to 24 years old, 52% of men in Australia, they are overweight or obese. But then if you go to the age 45 to 54, do you know how many? Try.
45 to 54?
Yeah, how many men?
You're supposed to be in reasonably good nick. Oh, maybe you're not. Men. Well, if 52% of young blokes are,
yeah,
you'd have to say it's got to be more like 60%, is it?
83. Wow. And for women...
83%?
Yeah. That's according to the government. I have in front of me, I'm reading it. For women, for example, age 18-24 is 40%. And age 65 to 74, 73%.
Yeah.
It's a problem. It's a major, major problem. Because as you said, you know, being overweight or obese is increasing the risk of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, heart failure, many cancer, breast, colon, prostate, endometrial, liver, and dementia, and also fatty liver disease that is becoming basically the first cause of, and kidney disease, diabetic nephropathy.
This is all based on the BMI, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is, it's a troublesome measure, this, isn't it? Just explain again what it is. I mean, I did it very briefly, but a BMI is?
Is basically your weight,
yeah,
your weight in kilograms,
yeah,
divided by your height in meters square. So basically, it's you multiply by two your height. So your weight in kilo divided by the square
of your height.
So of your height in meter.
So for example, I'm 165 centimeters, 1.65.
And
my weight is I'm not. Oh, I won't. I won't cheat on this.
What is your height?
165.
165. And your weight?
77. Now, I'm not cheating on that.
Your BMI is 28.3, so you're overweight.
Considered overweight?
Yeah.
which I think is ridiculous.
So to be normal weight, you should be, let me see, 65. So if you were 65 kilos, it was 23.9.
I haven't been 65 kilos. Since I was about 19.
When you were 19, you were how what was your weight? When you were 18?
9 stone 6.
No, I don't know. Stones, I cannot translate in stones.
Well, I think 9 stone 6 is about 60 kilos.
Okay, so yeah, exactly. So your BMI was 22. It's my BMI now. No, I'm a bit lower than 22 because I'm, let me see, I'm 178 divided by, I'm now 69. My BMI is 21.8.
Yours is? A beanpole, Luigi. But is it, realistically, though, that means that for me to achieve what is regarded as a healthy BMI means I've got to be the same weight as I was when I was 19.
Yeah. Well,
that's is that realistic?
Yeah. The studies are showing. We're going to go back to that, you know, because BMI is good for big studies, population studies.
I'm not arguing about the evils of obesity. I really am not taking on I mean, because the evidence is in. I'm just wondering whether BMI is a useful measure for this.
Is a very gross indicator that is good for population studies.
Mm.
But then more important than your BMI is your waist circumference.
Okay.
Basically, in Australia, 60% of men and 66% of women, they have an abnormal waist circumference.
What should be my, given that I'm the guinea pig here?
Look, you know, the problem with waist circumference, you know, different races, people from different races have a different waist circumference. I think in US is 102 centimeters for men and 98 for women. But I think in Australia, it's 98 for men. At least the people from Europe is 98 for men and 88 for women, if I remember well.
Okay.
But
so a healthy waist circumference for me would be?
Less than 100, definitely.
Less than 100.
Yeah.
So if I'm over 100, I'm in the red zone.
Yeah. And it's more important.
That's 100 centimeters.
Yeah. And it's more important than BMI. So the rule is that
if I'm more than a meter round.
Yeah. The rule is that, you know, you should try to keep
Dave's
your
looking very sheepish here. Dave's looking very sheepish.
Your waist as low as possible, and you should increase your muscle mass.
Yeah.
Because as we get older, what happens, you know, we have less muscle mass and, you know, we have an increase in waistline.
Yeah.
And when you have an increase in waistline, it's not muscle, it's fat. It's called abdominal fat.
We know this, don't we?
Yes, we know that.
We put it on, it's the gut.
Because, you know, there are people who are bodybuilder, they have a high BMI, but it is all muscle and very little fat.
Exactly. Dave's saying that's what he is, but, you know, that's a lie. Luigi Fontana is here. I love it when Luigi comes in because he is a no BS type of guy. And we can talk about longevity and diet and obesity and all. We particularly want to talk about obesity because of the problem that we've arrived at. Calls 1-300-800-222 is the number. There are lines free. You'll get through if you want one. Joe's on the road. G'day, Joe.
Yeah, hi. Hello. Hey, Luigi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. I've been on I was wondering what you think of the keto diet. I've found it very successful. I've lost about 15 kilos and I'm just about back to the weight I like to be. It's, you know, not something I'd really thought of going on until a friend suggested it.
Explain what it is again for us, Joe. What is it? Just explain what it is.
So I don't eat sugar. I don't eat carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
So I get my energy from good fats, which include avocado, olive oil. If I'm cooking, I use butter. I put cream in my tea. I get good fat from nuts. So I'm seeking good oils, good fats, which are giving me the energy.
No rice, no bread, no pasta, that's that sort of thing.
Yeah, correct. And I must say, I actually feel great. I wouldn't have believed it. I thought it sounded a bit unusual and not like a good idea. But now that I'm actually eating it, I look forward to eating I eat really decent food, and I'm just really pleased with it. I don't know if there's any pitfalls I should be aware of.
Well, the thing about Luigi Fontana is, Joe, that he is interested only in the science of these things and what can be shown by scientific trial and not trial and error, scientific method to work or not to work. Luigi, what's the verdict on the keto diet?
Look, you know, I think, you know, it depends. You know, there are different type of keto diet, healthy keto diet. It looks like, you know, you are in on a healthier version of the keto diet compared to people, you know, that are on a very high animal fat type of
only eat meat
keto
sort of
diet. Yes. But then I think, you know, I think it's okay for losing weight transiently, but I don't think on the long term, if you have a very many years of a keto diet, it's healthy. So I think, you know, right now that, you know, you lost your kilos, you should, first of all, increase physical activity. Because every time you lose weight with diet, you lose muscle mass and you lose bone mass. And you don't want that, you know, because as you get older, you become sarcopenic, you lose strength, you lose muscle, you lose bone, you have a higher risk of bone fractures. So exercise, we'll discuss maybe later about it, is a must. Losing weight with diet only is bad.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm a farmer, so I'm always using physical work.
Fantastic.
Every day.
Fantastic.
So I got the exercise covered, but I take your point on that.
Yeah, and eventually, I think, you know, you should start to incorporate some complex carbs, mean legumes, and minimally processed whole grains, because they are very rich in fiber. And fiber is very good for your gut microbiota and for your immunity and for your inflammation. So, again, I'm okay with you that now you reach, you know, what you wanted to lose 15 kilos. But now I think, you know, slowly you should transition into more physical activity that is very well designed with resistance and endurance, and transition into not refined carbs are bad ever. You know, white pasta, white rice, you know, all this sugary stuff is bad. But complex carbs are good. You know, legumes, you know, lentils, chickpeas, borlotti beans, navy beans, because they are very rich in fiber, vitamins, minerals, iron, and also whole grains, you know, brown rice in a small quantity, or, you know, farro or barley, but whole grains, not refined grains.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you. I really appreciate those suggestions. I'll do that. That sounds good.
Good on fantastic. You. Good on you, Joe. Thanks. How's things on the farm? All right.
Oh yeah, excellent.
What are you growing?
I grow beef and lamb. Uh-huh. So I have Angus cattle, and I have crossbred. I breed double crossbred lambs to make beautiful lamb roasts.
Oh, nice.
So I've got, you know, Paul Dorset rams.
Hey, prices are a bit crook at the moment, aren't they, Joe?
Oh, to be honest, I've been so busy, I'm not sure. I got to sell some lambs tomorrow and sell some steers on Friday.
You'll find out then.
I'll find out for sure.
Sure. On you, Joe. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, actually, Joe's keto diet sounded kind of, as you say, better.
A
number of, a couple of people rang me the other night saying they were on the carnivore diet, which is like the keto diet, except you really only eat meat.
Yeah.
It just didn't seem right to me.
When I was in US, I was studying these people, a few of them, who have been eating only raw meat, raw cheese and milk, you know, only that.
Raw meat.
Yeah. When they came to me, you know, they were having lunch, and basically they have this, you know, really raw meat. It's called the primordial diet.
What's it called? Steak tartare, isn't it? I think more raw meat. Primordial. But actually, that's an interesting point, Luigi. Are we geared up to eat and process raw meat? I suppose we are. Are we?
Processed? What do you mean? Processed?
I mean, in our body. I mean,
look, you know, the problem with raw meat, I think, is, you know, that it's more likely to have parasites and stuff like that. You know, by cooking stuff,
apart from the parasite issue. But is there a nutritional benefit in cooking meat, or not?
You're asking something that I don't have an answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Because at some point humans must have, well, if you cook meat, it increases the flavour of it. It's certainly tastier to eat.
Yeah, but you
wonder
know.
Whether, I wonder whether it's nutritionally better. Don't know.
I think, you know, it's more or less the same. Yeah. I think, you know, it's more the risk of eating, you know, like raw fish or, you know, or for example, now when you do eat sushi, you know, they lower the temperature to kill these parasites, you know, otherwise you have the risk of, yeah.
Les of Safety Bay says, Phil, could you ask the esteemed Luigi what are the best tips to getting taller so he could reduce his BMI?
select your parents.
See, people are onto you, Luigi. That's enough. Jackie from Meridine. G'day, Jackie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi, Jackie. What's your question?
I've two questions. In the last 3 years, I've gone from being 82 kilograms to 98 kilograms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've changed everything. I've changed my diet. And I've listened to what Luigi said to the keto lady. That was very interesting about legumes, complex carbs, whatever he said there, and them moving more. All that resonates with me. I have two problems. One is I do not have any digestive enzymes. I don't understand why. And is there any diet that can fix it? I do take a pill for it. Yet it's out of your pancreas. But I have no problem at all with diabetes. It's these digestive enzymes. Anyway, my other question is, I have underactive thyroid, and I'm on thyroid medication first thing in the morning, and they say you mustn't eat for about a half an hour or an hour, but by the time that hour's up, I'm ravishingly hungry. And so if I'm not in the right place somewhere in my house or I'm in somebody else's house, you reach for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I must have to have a pre-prepared meal or something that's not, you know, not sweet or not fatty.
Okay.
What does he know about no digestive enzymes or...
have you heard of this, Luigi? No digestive enzymes?
Not really, unless, you know, you have a disease of the pancreas, but, you know, I never heard about, you know, that, you know, people don't have, you know, because if you don't have the enzymes, you know, you're going to starve, you know, because you need, you know, these pancreatic enzymes, you know, to digest
to break,
you know, the food. And so probably you have, I don't know, I mean, I should see the test. I should have, you know, some test in front of me, you know, to make a judgment.
Have you been to see a doc?
A gastroenterologist? Did you go to see a gastroenterologist?
Which one?
Gastroenterologist. He's a specialist of, you know, the intestine, you know, the...
I'll do that. I am taking a pill. But I don't think it's working properly. Because
yeah, you should see a gastroenterologist, you know, just to make sure, you know, you have the right diagnosis, okay?
They can do some proper tests, Jackie.
Yeah.
And do good luck with it. A gastroenterologist. Get your GP to give you a referral.
Yeah, exactly.
1-300-800-222 is the number, if you'd like to call. Leonie from Cavendish. G'day, Leonie.
Ciao, Luigi.
Ciao.
I'm 65, dear heart, and type 2 diabetic, not on insulin at the moment because of all the problems with it, but I'm also fat and have fibromyalgia and had an operation on each knee, so I've got a lot of pain there. So how do I exercise and what do you recommend with the diet? And I'm on the medium side of not overwhelmed with cash being on a pension.
So I think, you know, again, you know, it's difficult to make judgment, you know, as a doctor without seeing patients, you know, without doing a physical exam. So it's you know, these are kind of tricky questions, you know, you need to have a full history and a physical examination. But I think, you know, that, for example, swimming is a good exercise, is a complete exercise where you have low impact on your joints. Or, I don't know, maybe biking on a stationary bike. But swimming, for example, is an excellent exercise to activate muscles. And but, you know, maybe to see if an exercise physiologist, you know, if you see maybe an exercise physiologist, you can ask, you know, your doctor for a referral for an exercise physiologist. Maybe he can study with you what is the most appropriate type of exercise for your conditions. In terms of diet, as I said, plant-based, mainly pesco-vegetarian diet, where, you know, you eat a lot of whole grains and beans and vegetables, nuts, seeds, and fish, is, you know, I did a study when I was in US, when I was working at Washington University, where, you know, we fed people for 2 months on a Mediterranean high fiber, as I said, you know, beans and whole grains and fish and nuts and seeds and vegetables. We had to overfeed people 250 calories a day, otherwise they were losing weight. Okay, so if you are on a very high healthy Mediterranean diet, you're going to lose weight without counting calories.
My problem with the bicycling or the swimming, I've tried both, and the pain is just incredible.
Are you living in Sydney?
Sorry,
where are you living?
Yeah? In a small village in southwest Victoria.
Okay.
So you're saying the issue with swimming and cycling is that it's painful.
Just about anything. I can be lying down in bed and just get up and scream because the pain is just intense. Pain is not one of my favorite four-letter words.
No, yeah.
Anyway, see an exercise physiologist and, you know, maybe he can help you, you know, with some type of exercise. Again, it is difficult to make a judgment, you know, just, you know, without having a clear history and a physical examination of someone. So,
Thanks, Leonie. Thorin says, Phil, I'm 41, 6 foot even, 186 pounds. Thorin, we've been metrics in this country for a while, 32-inch waist. Thorin's very firmly in the old Imperials. I'm aware how unhealthy I am, but I'm wondering how you work out this BMI thing. Well, Thorin, if you're 6 foot, which is what, 2 metres, is it? No, a bit under, 1.9 metres. So he's 1.9 metres.
So let me put it down. If it's
he's 6 feet, so I think 6 feet's what?
I don't know. And I'm able to think in feet, in centimetres or metres.
I think it's 1.9, isn't it, metres? And he's 186 pounds, so that's about 85 kilos.
85. So his BMI is 23.5, so he's in the normal.
You're quite healthy.
Yeah.
Thorin, yeah.
If it's 1.9 metre and 85 kilos, his BMI is 23.5.
Yeah. Well, he's in good shape.
Yeah, well, so it depends on the waist circumference.
And a 32-inch waist, he'd be well under 100 if he's 32.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing well, Thorin.
Yeah.
Go with it. 1-300-800-222. Gavin from Wollongong. G'day, Gavin.
Yes, good evening.
Evening.
I've been obese for the last 33 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I have a lot of trouble stopping eating once I start eating. I was wondering, is stomach stapling useful to people? And if it is, what is the cost of that?
So bariatric surgery is one of the options that in a obesity clinic, for example, the Charles Perkins Center, we have, you know, Tanya Markovic and Samantha Hawkins, who are our expert on obesity. And normally you start with a very low calorie diet. And if you are unsuccessful, then there is, you know, a consideration for bariatric surgery, like the operation you were mentioning. Or, you know, there is the gastric bypass, but, you know, typically you go for an operation on your stomach to reduce the size of your stomach, so, you know, you feel full sooner. But then that's the last resort, and it's based on your BMI and your metabolic complications. So if you have severe type 2 diabetes and other metabolic complications severe enough, you know, you may be eligible. And I think, there is Medicare. You don't have to be private. You know, there is a list, of course, you know, but it can be basically a Medicare operation. So it shouldn't be charged.
Mm. Okay.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Bye. And good luck with it as well. People are getting stuck into me, not you, Luigi, because I said I guessed at 6 feet being about 1.9 metres. It's 1.83. So can we do his BMI on 1.83? So if he's 1.83 metres high,
183 centimetres, yeah, and weight is
85 kilograms.
25.4.
So he's still okay.
He's borderline. So basically the normal is between 18.5 and 25. It's considered normal if it's a huge range, as you can imagine. And from 25 to 30, you are overweight. And more than 30, you are obese.
Okay. But Thorin, you're still pretty much okay.
Yeah.
Slightly on the borderline maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Apologies, everyone. We're getting a lot of caning from not... well, we have been metric in this country for quite a while, haven't we? 1-300-800-222 is the... I know, look, I appreciate it. It's funny, I know. With some things, for example, land measurements, I can only imagine I can still only do it in the old imperials. So I share the thoughts you might have on the matter. Keith in Busselton. G'day, Keith.
G'day.
Hello.
Yeah, how are we?
I'm good, Keith. What's your question?
Oh, look, I've got a problem now. I'll be 66 years of age this year.
Yep.
And I'm now 5'7", that's about 100 and, well, I'm not quite sure in centimetres, but...
170 something? 170, I think.
74, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite sure. And
what do you weigh?
65 kilos.
Uh-huh.
For the last 40 years.
Okay. So what's his BMI, Luigi?
21.5.
So your BMI is pretty good, Keith?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't put no weight on.
Oh, you can't put weight on. Okay.
Yeah. So he has the opposite problem.
Opposite problem, yeah. You're in a very small minority, it seems, Keith. But yeah. I mean, good luck. I mean, it's a good problem to have, yeah. How can he do it, Luigi? How can he put on weight?
There are some people, you know, there is a very small percentage of people that they have a very high metabolism. Mm. There is a friend of mine who is studying these people, and despite they're eating a lot of calories, they're not putting on weight. Yeah. And typically it's younger individuals,
sure.
But, you know, it's one of these exceptions.
Yeah, but you see... it runs through the family, they're all diabetics, and I'm the odd one out. We haven't got the diabetics.
Okay. So you haven't got diabetes?
So you don't have diabetes? You don't?
No, I don't. All the rest of the family do.
Okay.
But not you. And, that's good.
No. And when the doctor said, he said, well, you should be glad.
Yeah, and, of course.
I don't eat, and I just drink and smoke cigarettes. Actually, I won't tell you a lie. I'm rolling a smoke now and having a beer, talking to you.
Good luck to you. Good luck.
Yeah.
But I get very wild upset watching these shows, Jenny Craig's and all this, and lose weight. But how can a person put weight on?
I don't know. Well, putting weight on, Luigi?
Beg your pardon?
I said putting weight on.
If his muscle is okay.
If it's okay.
Yeah. So if he does, you know, some resistant exercises, increases muscle mass, it's good.
Nothing wrong with a beer, Keith, but beer and a smoke, maybe lose the smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Luigi, we've got obese in the West. I'd love your thoughts on it, but my understanding of it is because of the explosion of super processed foods, which people are eating in large amounts.
Yeah, is it
we've lost our adherence to whole foods. We now eat super processed foods, and this is a major part of the problem. Is that it?
It's a major one. It's also the major reduction in exercise. You know, back then, you know, we didn't have, you know, all these cars, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, you know, I was thinking before, the first video games was Commodore 64. I think, you know, it was basically when I was 14 or 13 years old. Before that, you know, we were spending huge amount of time outside playing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, these children of ours, you know, they spend so many hours in front of these iPhones and iPad and playing video games. So there is a huge reduction in physical activity. People are not walking, playing, running like before. And as you said, you know, the major problem is the change in the quality of food. You know, most people, they are consuming lots of ultra-processed, refined food that is high in calories, low in fiber, and this is responsible for a big chunk of the epidemic of obesity in Western countries. And not only Western countries, because the worst is in these developing countries where for many, many years, people, they were kind of calorie-restricted, lots of exercise. It's called the thrifty genes. They've been used, you know, to a lot of physical activity, very low calories. And when they get exposed, like the Pima Indian or, you know, the Aboriginal here in Australia or now in the Middle East, when they are exposed to the same amount of calories than people in Europe or Australia or US, they do even worse. The rate of type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease is much worse than in Western countries.
1-300-800-222 is the number. Professor Luigi Fontana is here. Luigi is the author of The Path to Longevity, How to Reach 100 with the Health and Stamina of a 40-Year-Old. Pretty sure Luigi's going to get there. I'm not sure about myself, but anyway. And The Manual of Health Longevity, and you can look at him on his YouTube channel too, Longevity Now. FL. Christine from Glen Iris. Hi, Christine.
Oh, hello. Luigi sounds absolutely amazing.
He is.
I'm going to be 70 this year. And a couple of years ago, my GP asked me if I'd like to lose some weight. And I said, yes, I would. And I was 96 kilos. With a height of 174, and I've lost 12 kilos, and I feel really well.
So now you are, your weight is, now is?
It's 12 less. I've got an app, so I'm 84.
84 kilos. Yeah, yes. Now your BMI is 27.7.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. But I have to tell you the most remarkable thing. When I was overweight, I was required to have a CPAP machine. And a week ago, I had another sleep study done and my sleep apnea has gone. And I went back to my GP on Friday and she said, yes, that's the thing. When you lose weight like that, you're breathing all your muscles around your neck. You haven't got all that fat because I lost 12 kilos. It's like carrying 4 bags of oranges around with you.
Absolutely. Yes, you're right. You know, one of the complications of obesity is sleep apnea, and then it requires CPAP. And if you lose weight, you know, you have a higher chance of stopping using the CPAP because, as you said, you know, you lose, you know, all the fat around your neck that, you know, it can basically cause this sleep apnea that, by the way, is not just a problem of, is that, you know, it's having sleep apnea is increasing your risk of cardiovascular disease because it's increasing your blood pressure, inflammation. So it's really bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Christine. Yes. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yes, exactly. What do you think, Luigi, of the body positivity movement? This is a thing at the moment, which is, you know, we should celebrate all bodies, regardless of their size, weight, skin tone, blah, blah, blah. And that, you know, if you're overweight, we should not be making this a negative. I know some doctor friends of mine are extremely concerned about it because they say, for example, obesity in pregnancy is a dangerous thing. What do you think about it?
Well, as I said, I think, you know, we should move away from weight.
Yeah.
and BMI that is good for us, for scientists, you know, for doing these epidemiological studies. But as I said, you know, you can have a BMI of 23, 24 and have the same metabolic complications. So if you have a big belly, skinny legs, very skinny legs, for example, in India, the BMI people are much smaller than in US.
Yep.
I think, you know, in US, the mean BMI now is around 28. In India, it's like 23. And yet, the prevalence of type 2 diabetes that is very strongly associated with abdominal obesity is 12% compared to, I forgot, like 5% or 6% in US. So I think, you know, we should stay away from this discrimination about weight and look at the metabolic parameters. So if you go to your doctor and you see that, you know, you have high insulin, so you have insulin resistance, your glucose is abnormal, your blood pressure is high, your cholesterol is high with your HDL low, your triglyceride high, you have high inflammation, C-reactive protein, then forget about your body weight. You should be concerned about your metabolic health because these parameters are predictors of myocardial infarction, having a heart attack, a stroke, heart failure, dementia, cancer, fatty liver disease, diabetic nephropathy. So I don't care about your body weight, your shape. As a doctor, I'm interested in you not developing dementia, a heart attack, a stroke, or, you know, fatty liver disease leading to cirrhosis or kidney nephropathy, needing dialysis or kidney transplantation. You know, our healthcare is already overwhelmed. You know, we are already at the verge of a crisis. You know, it's unaffordable because of the numbers we discussed at the beginning of this, you know, where we have basically 25% of kids overweight or obese. We have, what did we say? It was like between 18 and 25, 53%, and 83% of men between 84 overweight or obese. This is unsustainable.
That's right.
Our healthcare cannot sustain the tsunami of unhealthy aging and metabolic diseases.
Yeah. Just a plain fact. Quite a few people want to ask this question that Max is going to ask you. I think, Max, you want to know about Luigi's thoughts on Ozempic. G'day, Max.
I just wanted to get his thoughts on it, whether that's useful long-term or whether it's just a fad or whether it's here to stay or and what's the side effects of it.
Hi. So I think, you know, it works. Ozempic works because it's reducing your appetite. So people who have been trying it, they know it works. I think, you know, as a tool to lose weight, you know, maybe like if you lose, let's say, you know, 15% of your body weight, so you become lighter and you start to change your relationship with food, and then you use that, you know, to increase your exercise. As I said, when you lose body weight with diet, and in some way Ozempic is calorie restriction, it's a pharmacological induced calorie restriction because you have less appetite and you eat less, you're losing muscle mass, no doubt. And you lose bone mass, no doubt. So the risk, if you stay on Ozempic without exercising, is that you become frail. And you have a higher risk of developing bone fracture as you get older. So if you fall and you have low bone mineral density, you have a hip fracture, your chance of dying is very high. And then, as I said, you know, technically we say, you know, there is calorie restriction with optimal nutrition because you're eating all the fiber, vitamins, minerals that are necessary for health. And there is calorie restriction with malnutrition. And so if you're eating an unhealthy diet and you eat less because you are using Ozempic, that is reducing your appetite, you are ending up potentially with malnutrition and, you know, a change in your gut microbiota. So as I said, just to summarize, as a start, as a kickstart to lose weight, to become lighter, so you can then exercise more because you have less weight on your joints, and then you start a program of resistance, endurance exercise, flexibility exercise, and you change your diet versus a mainly plant-based with fish and some meat here and there and low-fat dairy, that's okay.
In other words, use it initially, but you cannot stay on it. No.
Yes, that's what I think, you know.
Yeah. All right, Max, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-300-800-222. Chris from Hobart says, I'm 62. In the last 2 years, I've discovered strength training. It's brilliant. Not hard, 3 times a week, easy. Then I started walking because I felt stronger. One good thing leads to another. Anyone can do strength training. I'm future-proofing myself. Well, that's true. I think resistance training, particularly for people over 50 or 55, strength training is vital, isn't it?
For everybody.
Yeah.
It's a combination of 2-3 times a week of strength training and then 3 times a week of endurance exercise. When I was in US, you know, we did a study. People 50 to 60 years old randomized to combination of endurance and strength training for 1 year, 1 hour a day for 6 days a week. In 1 year, they lost 8% of their body weight and 40% of their abdominal fat.
Wow.
Amazing.
Just through strength training?
Yeah. Strength and some endurance. It's a combination.
Yeah. All right. Vicky from
Super Sandham. Powerful.
Hi, Vicky.
Hi, how you going?
Pretty good. What's up?
Yeah, I just want to talk to, I think it was Luigi or Dr. Luigi.
Luigi Fontana, yes, Professor Luigi
I'm
Fontana.
I'm very sorry. I'm new to the ABC, but I love it.
That's all right, Vicky. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask Dr. Luigi something. I'm meant to have surgery on my carpal tunnel, and my BMI is probably like it's 40 plus. I'm 96 kilos, and I'm just having a struggle with being on my own of getting that balance of like having a good diet and being like bored, and then I start to eat. And the doctor did offer me that diabetic tablet to lose weight.
No, it's not a tablet. I think it's an injection, isn't it, Vicky?
Oh, what? I don't know. I don't know what it is, but he did offer it to me just recently. He was the anaesthetist.
Yep.
And I refused to do it because I wanted to try this on my own. Because simply 40 years ago, I went to Weight Watchers. And I went like size 18 to a size 10, 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not motivated, I think, because I'm on my own. I'm not really sure what the mentality of it is.
Mm.
So maybe some little bit of lead of what I could do or what I can't do. And exercise, I should exercise, but it's a little bit hard. I've got, you know, I've got osteoporosis. I'm old. Put it that way. I'm getting old.
What do you think, Luigi? What's a way forward for Vicky?
Again, you know, it's difficult to make judgment, you know, based without the history and the physical examination. We have started in the Charles Perkins Center. I just started the Health for Life program. So I've hired a chef in residence, an exercise physiologist, and a dietitian. And basically we are now once a week, you know, we have workshops on healthy cooking. Our chef and dietitian, they are teaching our participants on how to prepare a healthy breakfast, you know, vegetables, beans, you know, with healthy, tasty recipes, because people, they don't really appreciate how many healthy recipes you can put together with a lot of different type of vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts, fish, that is going to be very important to lose your weight and improve your health. And then with the exercise physiologist on Thursday and Wednesday, David is basically teaching our participants how to implement a combination of endurance, strength training, and flexibility exercise while protecting back and other joints from bad exercise that can injure our. So we are getting there, you know. I think, you know, eventually it will be nice if we could implement this type of healthy lifestyle medicine clinic in GP practices.
Sure. Look, time has beaten us, Luigi, which is unfortunate because I know there's always a lot of interest when you come on, and rightly so. Professor Luigi Fontana is from the Faculty of Medicine and Health at the University of Sydney. As I say, the author of The Path to Longevity, How to Reach 100 with the Health and Stamina of a 40-Year-Old, and also you can look at his YouTube channel too, Longevity Now FL. Luigi, we'll get you back.
Thank you.
Good on you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.